Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Community Perspectives episode with Dr. Argy Stampas. I'm your host, David.
And I'm Faria. Today, we will be discussing the paper titled Reduction of Overactive Bladder Medications in Spinal Cord Injury with Self-Administered Neuromodulation, a randomized trial, which was published in the Journal of Urology. The paper was suggested to us by Asia's Research Committee. Our guest today is Dr. Stampas. Dr. Argy Stampas is a physiatrist and researcher specializing in spinal cord injury medicine. His medical degree is from SUNY Upstate Medical University, with subsequent residency at the University of Pennsylvania, and then fellowship training in spinal cord injury medicine at the Johns Hopkins. He now serves as Vice Chair of Research and Innovation and is a full professor in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at UT Health Houston's McGovern Medical School, as well as Director of Spinal Cord Injury Medicine Research at Tier Memorial Hermann. Dr. Stampas leads federally funded studies advancing neurorehabilitation science and innovative recovery strategies for people with SCI. And today he is here to talk to us about his work in neurogenic bladder with a focus on bladder management via neuromodulation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Stampas.
Thank you both for having me.
All right, Doc. The hip bone is connected to the thigh bone. How is stimulating my leg going to help out my bladder? Please help me understand this one.
It is a tough one to explain because we really don't know. We don't know exactly how it works, but it actually stems from acupuncture thousands of years ago. It's in their literature. Where they put that little acupuncture needle is exactly where we do tibial nerve stimulation. And to make a long story short, thousands of years later, they did the animal studies that showed that there is a connection between the nerve and in the tibial nerve and the bladder, and vice versa. So stimulating the bladder showed activity along that tibial nerve, and stimulating the tibial nerve showed activity in the bladder. And so after going through FDA trials after that in humans, it also panned out. It is FDA approved for overactive bladder symptoms, which unfortunately excludes neurogenic bladder, but that's a totally different podcast, I think. How I tried to explain it, and this is something my research assistants can confirm. She tells me that one time she's young and single and she was out at a club and she did not want, there was a long wait for the bathroom. And so I had told her, and I tell the patients, it's kind of like when you tap your foot up and down really fast when you have to go to the bathroom. And she told her friends and herself, and lo and behold, they didn't have like the urgency that they are used to having waiting in the line to go to the bathroom. So I think there is a real connection there. And we do it subconsciously.
I never thought about it that way. That's all right. Next time I will try that.
Definitely.
So what you use in your study is a self-administered utilization of this neuromodulation. Can you talk about the history of tibial nerve stimulation? What are the options out there, and you know, what can individuals with SCI use?
So really, again, a lot of the FDA approved stuff is for overactive bladder. So using it in people with neurogenic bladder is off label, but we do that even with our bladder medications, right? We do for a lot of our treatments, we use the medications off label. So this too would be off label. And things have really taken off in that arena of tibial nerve stimulation. So when I was calling these companies that had things on the market for overactive bladder, I wasn't getting the response that I am getting actually now, where, you know, 5 years later, they are more willing to try their overactive bladder products in people with neurogenic bladder. So aside from the one that's already approved that you have to get it done in clinic, like the needle that goes into your foot, there's a sock that you could wear that has electric stimulators built in. There are three implantable devices that are FDA approved. So there are a variety of things, but essentially it's a small device that gets buried under your skin into your foot. Your lower leg, to stimulate that tibial nerve in a variety of different ways. And then what I did is kind of the the everyman or every person type of treatment, which is using just a regular stim unit and having the correct settings and the electrode placement to do it, do it at home on your own.
Yeah, we really appreciate reducing the burden. So for the listeners, as Dr. Stampas explains in his paper, for the previous what he called or is called percutaneous approaches where the needle is put into your leg, you have to come into a clinic to have that done. So you're driving to the clinic every day to have that, and that's a big burden. So really appreciate you bringing this to the home, bringing it to the people and democratizing tibial nerve stimulation. Dr. Stampas, you clarified the indication here from the FDA, and you now brought this into spinal cord injury, but would you expect like every kind of spinal cord injury to respond to this, or is there like a certain type of bladder problem in SCI where you would say this is better than in other types of SCI?
I think there's two things to consider. One is your type of bladder. So most of us will presume that if you have a very low level of spinal cord injury, like in your L levels or your T, 11, 12, 10, 11, 12, perhaps, that you would probably have what's considered a lower motor neuron bladder. So instead of it being overactive, it's underactive. It's not really meant to help that because the tibial nerve stimulation, it works pretty much the same way that the bladder meds do. So it helps with the storage phase of voiding, right? So it's really not a huge problem in that underactive bladder for storing. It's more of the, being continent. That's the biggest challenge in those bladders. The other thing that's really important to consider is whether you're on the nerve. The way we check whether we're on the nerve is by putting the leads exactly where we think it should be, along like the inner part of your ankle, and then like a hand's breadth up from that, and then turning the stimulation up until you see your toe flex. Without seeing that toe flex, we don't really know if we're on the nerve. And if it doesn't flex, it could mean a variety of things. It could mean that the pathway that the nerve is following is damaged, which is very possible, especially if you do have a low level of injury, if you had any kind of pelvic fractures during, your original injury or subsequently. And then the other part of it is having lower extremity edema, which so many people with spinal cord injury will have. The lower extremity edema really dissipates the current. So it's hard to drive the electricity deep if there's fluid there. It ends up kind of going, horizontally. It goes across. So it doesn't get to the nerve, and that is quite a challenge.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about, and a lot will, especially just with the edema aspect, will fluctuate for folks, especially with other existing medical conditions that they're working through. So you mentioned that, just going, quick question about this, the setup of it. So you have to have that toe flexion piece to make sure that there's viable nerve that's intact to see if this is actually going to work for individuals. Can you touch a little bit about, if, before we get into the paper itself, but if this is something that someone is interested in and they want to have a device for home, I guess it's a two-pronged question. Can they or their caregiver get trained on how to emulate this at home? And then second, you had mentioned this briefly before, if they want to acquire a home unit, what's the best way to get one?
I think the answer is going to be the same for both questions. I think you definitely should do this under the care of your physician. I've had several physicians reach out to me. I've had some therapists like PTs and OTs reach out to me as well, because in the field of spinal cord injury, I don't know if the physicians are the experts, right? I think perhaps the therapists have a lot more expertise in doing the stimulation hands-on. So it is something that can be taught by a variety of different healthcare professionals. But I think the biggest concern is coming off meds. We don't want to do permanent damage, right? It's not very flippant to reduce your bladder meds, because the what can happen, it, especially if it turns into reflux that damages the kidneys, that's permanent. It's not like we can undo that damage. So it's important to get it done under the guidance of your clinician, so they can do the urodynamic studies to check and make sure things are okay. Maybe do periodic ultrasounds of the kidney and bladder, things of that nature to just make sure that you're doing things correctly. Because I found that even in this clinical trial, people who weren't getting benefit because their urodynamics were worse in the placebo group, the sham control group, they still reported high satisfaction. And that tells me there was probably a bit of bias in this study because probably people who wanted to join this study wanted to come off their bladder meds, right? So they were driven to come off these meds and maybe not noticing that their, incontinence was worse or their spasticity was worse, things like that.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. And then one more kind of setup question before we let you tell us about the results of the study and how great everything was. But from the outside, guys and gals, when it comes to peeing, we got different parts. Would you expect that this approach will still work for men and women?
I do think it'll work equally for men and women. I think the wiring is essentially the same. The outlets, probably the biggest difference, right, between men and women. The pelvic floor, too, has significant differences in what it contributes to continence in men and women. So it can't always, incontinence can't always be blamed on the neurogenic bladder specifically when there's other things going on in the outlet. Like pelvic floor weakness, prostate in men, terrible constipation could mess everything up as well. So there's a lot of other factors that need to be included. But as far as whether or not this is something for men and women, I think for sure this is for anyone with SCI neurogenic bladder that has overactive bladder symptoms.
That's great. And then in your paper, there were some, the results do clarify, there were some women that participated in the study.
Correct. Yeah. And it kind of aligned with the demographics that we see nationwide, that it's mostly men with SCI and fewer women.
All right, Dr. Sampa. So now, can you give us the top line results here? You guys did your trial. Is the tibial neurostimulation, is it benefiting bladder for people with spinal cord injuries?
Yes, it's pretty much what we thought, that 95% of the people in the active group that were getting the stim were able to reduce their bladder meds. And then the reduction in the bladder meds was far superior in the tibial nerve group than it was in the control. And one of the interesting things was that so many people were able to reduce their bladder meds in the control group, which, leads me to believe that there's an opportunity for clinicians to look at the bladder meds of their pe of people with spinal cord injury who've been on these meds for years, that maybe it can be reduced.
And can you talk about in this study how the decision making was happening of, reducing, not reducing, who was making those decisions and how that came to be?
Yeah, this was a patient-driven study. So we wanted our patients to use the stimulation for 2 weeks. In my mind, it's a similar approach to how I would dose medications if I wanted to switch, like let's say from, gabapentin to pregabalin, right? And so we want to have like a good amount of activity present before we start taking away the medication that's working. So they were reducing, if they were on two meds, they would take the medication that was kind of the secondary med, like the one that's helping the primary med, which I, might require some physicians to help figure out which one's the primary and which one's the secondary. But largely, it's going to be the one that you're on first as your primary med, and then they added the second one later to help out. And they would reduce it by like one pill a week, so very kind of gently. And if they were having symptoms like more incontinence or some of those extra symptoms that perhaps maybe urologists don't really consider, like worsening spasticity or worsening dysreflexia, then we would go back up to the lowest dose that worked. So over this 3 month period, they had a lot of opportunity to go down in meds. We would sometimes even revisit going down. So if they thought it didn't work and they would go back up after another week of using stimulation, we would say like, hey, let's try to go down again. And they would try, and we did find more success if we did that. So maybe the induction 2 week period maybe wasn't sufficient for everybody. Maybe they needed to try it for 3 or 4 weeks before they had good results in reducing meds.
Yeah, that's great. We appreciate you clarifying the benefits here and how you guys measured them. But if I'm thinking about electrical stimulation that I've received, for other uses like for movement, usually you turn that thing up, you get a better response. So do you think it's possible with this stimulator, like if you gave it more juice, would you get better benefit for the bladder?
I really don't. I think that even when they looked at the animal studies in the 60s and moved on to the FDA trials, they all used submotor stimulation. And even some of the studies that have been done in humans that used motor weren't as successful, in my opinion, compared to the submotor group.
It's great. More is not always better.
Dr. Stampis, I want to take one last question just from the clinical side of things, thinking about safety and any adverse events. There's obviously a lot of positives with the study that you looked into and you conducted in terms of, it's a home unit, it's easier to use, increased satisfaction with the participants who used it. And then obviously the big thing, decreased usage of medication, which, as we all know, medications, pros and cons for each and every one. Were there any specific adverse events that were related to the nerve stimulation that anyone who's listening, who's potentially interested in trying this out for better quality of life and decreasing their medications, anything that they should know about or be concerned about?
There were none, but there's a caveat. We didn't include people who had a prior negative experience with electric stimulation. So we're okay with having the adhesive reaction. So we have some allergy type of electrodes for people whose skin is sensitive, and that was okay. But if they reported like, intolerance to electric stimulation, whether it's too painful or it gives them some kind of response that they didn't want, they weren't included. So I think for otherwise for anybody who's okay with stim, and we're again, this is submotor, so this is probably the lowest current where you wouldn't have pain. I think it would be beneficial. But to specifically answer the question, the adverse events related to the device or the trial were no, there were no serious adverse events.
Perfect. That's a huge win.
All right, Dr. Stampos, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us about your tibial nerve stimulation study here for bladder.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I think people should be on the lookout for these devices that are going to be commercially available soon. I think that they'll really be a game changer for a lot of people.
Definitely. Thank you, Dr. Stampis.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The paper discussed in this episode was chosen based on the recommendation of Asia's research committee. The podcast was founded thanks to the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh and is now made possible by your producer host, David McMillan, Freya Kolick, and Marla Petriello, our production assistant and editor, Chris Rigner, and Asia's front office. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please contact us at SCIPerspectivesPodcast@gmail.com.